strangely enough, started there in chapter 25, verse number 1, and then doubled all the way back to chapter number 1, and picked up a couple of verses here in chapter number 1, and just started skipping around to other chapters and verses in Samuel's life, looking at what made Samuel the man that he was. By the time his story came to a close there in chapter 25, and so basically we're getting the beginning for him, what came about that caused him to be conceived, and then it just goes through. I don't know how far we'll get through it, but through some of his interactions with Saul along the way as well there. And let's read the verses here and we'll see what we got. In chapter number 1, it's verse 17 and verse number 27 as well. And the Bible says, "Then Eli answered and said, Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him. And when you skip down to verse 27, for this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I asked of him." Now, obviously, this is the time when Hannah, she has gone up to the tabernacle, and she's praying. You know, her lips are moving, but there ain't no words coming out of her mouth. She's been in utter misery because of her husband's other wife has just loved to give her the needle constantly about, hey, I got kids. You ain't got no kids. Our society demands that women give their husbands kids, and you can't do it. You're a failure, yada, yada, yada. And it has just absolutely torn Hannah up. And even to the point where this trip here, she would not eat. And her husband had, you know, always made sure that they had a nice big spread, and he finally asked her, hey, you know, what's the deal here? You know, am I not as good enough for you as 10 sons? And no, he wasn't. She wanted a child that she could give to her husband, specifically a boy. And it's no, you're not good enough. So she goes to the tabernacle and she starts praying about it. And Eli, he's looking around. I don't know if he just had nothing better to do, so he's watching everybody real closely, or if he's a busybody, you know, just, oh yeah, I see she's over there doing that type of thing. But it's like, the lips are moving, but I ain't hearing nothing. Oh my soul, she's drunk. Great, I got a deal with another one of these type. So he goes and does what any good guy who's in charge of the church will do, and berates her. Doesn't ask what's going on. He says, hey, how long are you going to keep drinking? And he'll put the stopper back in a bottle, knock it off already. He's like, maybe if you'd stop and ask what's going on first instead of assuming you know everything. But of course, Eli, you know, he's a good Baptist minister. He just assumed he knew. And no, I'm not drunk. I'm not one of these people. I've just got a prayer. A prayer that is just so burdensome. I don't even have the strength to utter the words. Everything I've got to say it in my heart, more or less. And so Eli, I don't know how much sincerity he had when he said, go in peace, and the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him. If he's, you know, hey, I totally back you on this, or if it's like, yeah, whatever. I don't want to get close enough to smell your breath. Yeah, I'm sure you're lit. Whatever you say, honey, go ahead. I don't know. Okay, none of us do. And given how Eli was with his own kids and all that, yeah, we can kind of question just how sincere he was. And we all should take that to account into our own lives of how sincere are we being when we take the prayer request? How sincere are we being about praying over these other matters that someone else has just brought up? I mean, is it just words? Do we just, okay, I'm in agreement with whatever they've said, Lord, and you please take care of it, and that's the end of it? Or does it actually touch our hearts? Again, I don't know if it actually touched Eli's heart or not, but it's like, hey, I hope you get what you've asked for. And what happens? Go home, and bada boom, bada bing, there's a child conceived, and she's on cloud nine. She's happy as can be, and the time of life comes, and guess what? It's a baby boy. Praise the Lord. Everything is wonderful. This is great. And Elkanah says, all right, it's time for us to make our yearly trip back to the tabernacle. And she says, nope, not doing it. I'm not going until the child is ready to go. Because once he's ready to go, I'm giving him to the Lord. This is not going to be something in waiting. This is going to be something that's going to be done properly. So we come down to verse number 27 here. And here she is. She has presented Samuel as this little boy, probably around 5 years old or so. As for this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I asked of him. You can almost picture her saying, see, Eli, I weren't drunk that day. It was all legit. Can't blame her. So, Eli had first seen Hannah. She was crying near uncontrollably back in verse 10. Only her lips were moving in verse 13. So he had thought that she was drunk, verse 14. And this goes to further show the moral decay of the nation, that this would be so common of a sight of drunkenness. It's automatically assumed that that was the case and not sincerity in prayer. She had, however, been praying then, and now she was presenting her praise report. God had answered her prayer for this son. And that's why when we take our prayer request, we love getting praise reports. Because it just goes to show God is still on the throne. God still answers prayers. God will answer our prayers as well. One thing about being barren, you're not supposed to be able to have kids. Hannah's no longer barren. Even if she never had another child the rest of her days, she had one, and that was all she needed. Of course, she ended up having three boys and two girls, if I remember correctly. So, hey, she was blessed. She just had to wait for the blessing. And sometimes, when we're taking these prayer requests, I've got it there in my Bible, we're going to have to wait for the answer to come for those prayer requests. We don't like it. But sometimes God answers yes, sometimes He answers no, and sometimes He answers slow. You gotta wait until the timing is right. Maybe it's what you want, part of what you want, none of what you want, but it will always be what God wants for us if we'll wait on the Lord. She had not told Eli what she had prayed about that day. It was an unspoken prayer request. But now she was telling everybody about it. My God answered prayers. The lesson then skips over to chapter 2, verse number 18. Yeah, just verse 18 of chapter 2. It says here, but Samuel ministered before the Lord, being a child girded with a linen ephod. So Samuel is this boy. And obviously he has spent some time there at the tabernacle already. You know, how long? I don't know. I couldn't honestly tell you. My personal opinion, he was probably pushing around 10 years old or so, getting big enough where he could start doing some of the things around the tabernacle on his own. So where are we at? The boy would have done his duties in the outer courts of the tabernacle. His ministry starts here to contrast against the two sons of Eli with their selfish ministry and bitter end. Samuel was living to serve the Lord however he could. Because of this distinction, Samuel stood out from the darkness that had been building around the tabernacle, and the people all saw this. Again, everybody knew Hophni and Phinehas were a couple of scoundrel, no goods. They were doing anything and everything for themselves. This was not good. Daddy Eli, who was the next to the last judge of the nation, as well as the high priest, he did not understand the rod of correction at all. And these boys were running amok. Now here comes Samuel, this little boy here. And everybody looks at him and says, he's going to do something for God one day. You can see how he is just serving the Lord. And it is great when you got a bunch of kids there in your church and you can start watching them and picking out. Yep, I can tell you right now. Yep, for sure. I remember one year we had our youth over at Sunrise and they were getting ready to head down to this youth conference down in Tennessee that C.T. Townsend runs. And me and Pastor Clement were talking, and we'd had the last year or two someone from our group answered a call to preach. And we're talking, and I says, I think that guy right there is going to. And Pastor says, you really think so? I says, yeah. Who do you think? I think it would be that one right there. And he looked at me and says, let's not forget the dark horse right there. And we had three of them, all three of them come back and making their announcement that they'd answered the call to preach. You could see how God was moving in their lives. God is going to use a willing heart. Not someone who's willing to bend the rules and he'll break them if necessary to do it. God wants the ones who are going to follow him. And of course, Samuel, he ends up doing everything that he's told to do. Dutifully. Yes.
To change the subject, we're talking about preachers. Okay. The three young, the two young people that preached Sunday. John and James.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have been called to be pastor to preach.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. So I don't know how much longer James is going to be here because, you know, his family is back over in Africa. So he's here to go to school at Hiles.
I didn't even get to say goodbye to him Sunday. I was so upset because I didn't get to.
Well, see that. But that's the wonderful thing about the coat room we've got here. He left here with four winter coats that he needed.
Really?
Yep.
Awesome.
That's just how good God is.
Yes,
he
is.
And he told me the reason why he was ended up being late on Sunday, because normally the bus he's on is back by 9:45. They had some issues and they didn't get back till 10:05. But he didn't have no trades coming back here, so that's how that worked out for him. But again,
both of them are just beautiful young men. We love them so much.
They have been a help. They truly have. All right, getting back here to verse 18. We are told now that he is ministering before the Lord in verse 11. That description had also included Eli, so we see here that he has grown some and can now do certain things on his own. He wasn't a man yet, but he had gotten older, taller, more experienced, and smarter. The linen ephod was an apron and was the typical attire of the priest. That Samuel is wearing one at such a young age shows his special dedication to the Lord at this time, and foreshadowed his service on behalf of the whole nation. As remember, we're getting close to a chapter up here where Hophni and Phinehas are going to be killed in battle. The Ark of the Covenant is going to be taken in that same battle. Eli is going to hear the bad news and falls over dead because of it. So the nation is getting ready to need a new spiritual leader. And something we need to always keep in mind when God removes older leaders and he starts raising up younger leaders there, he knows what he's doing. Yeah, those younger leaders might make the mistake here and there, but if they're following the Lord, things are going to work out. The lesson then skips over to chapter 3, verse number 3, 9, and 10. Of course, verse number 1 starts off by saying, and the child ministered unto the Lord before Eli. Then we get down here to verse 3, so we know he's still young. Verse 3, and ere the lamp of God went out in the temple of the Lord, where the ark of God was, and Samuel was laid down to sleep. Let's go with that verse there for now. The word ere means before. So before the lamp of God would go out, you know, you can only put so much fuel into the lamp for it to burn overnight. So they'd have to get up early in the morning before the sun would rise to refill it, so that the light would not go out. Because you didn't want it going out just before daylight, because the fire of the Lord, you go back all the way to Moses, the fire of the Lord was never to go out. You know, the Greeks may think they had something going on there with the Olympics, and that torch has got to be run with the same flame that lit the torch back there in Greece and go all the way across and all. Yeah. God had them beat by a few hundred years. The fire was never supposed to go out, so Samuel would have to get up early every morning and go take care of it. Kind of like the old slogan, time to make the donuts. Well, Samuel had to go fuel that thing up there. It's fitting. Wait a minute. Let me get back and finish reading this. So the word air means before. So this means it was early in the morning before the sun would come up and the lamp would need to be refilled. We find that all the way back in Leviticus chapter 24, verses 2 and 3. It is fitting that Samuel seems to have taken over the responsibility for refilling the lamp now that Eli has started to go blind physically. Eli had already made himself spiritually blind by allowing his sons to continue in their sins. And Samuel would not only take over and become the last of the judges, but he would serve to keep the light on in Israel throughout the course of his life. So kind of the first Motel 6, we'll keep the light on for you. That's what Samuel is busy doing here. He's keeping that light on. And yeah, even though you look at us here real quickly, we're small in number, okay? Even more so here on the Tuesday nights. But we're still keeping the light on. All it takes to start a raging fire is one match. You think how big a match is. It's not very big. You strike that thing, you're not getting a 4 foot wide flame. It's small. But if you do it right, you can take that little match there and you can start a forest fire. You can take an ember off of a cigarette, let that ember fly a mile down the road and land in some dry leaves, and you can start a forest fire. So we don't have to worry about how little we are. So long as we're keeping the light going, God can do the rest. We just have to make ourselves available for Him. Now, verse 9. Therefore, and this is after God has called to Samuel, and Samuel gets up, runs to Eli. You called for me, and Eli says, I didn't call for you. Go back to sleep, and he lays down and gets up. Hey, you called for me. No, go back to bed, you little brat. And he comes in, and you called for me. No, I didn't call. Ooh, I wonder. Verse 9, therefore Eli said unto Samuel, go lie down. And it shall be, if he call thee, that thou shalt say, speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. So Samuel went and lay down in his place. Now, Eli's not totally sure if this is God calling him. And if God is calling him, if Samuel hasn't already missed the boat by keep running to him instead of talking to God. So Eli's hedging his bets, is if he calls for you again, then you stay right there. You don't move. You don't get up. You definitely don't come to me. You just say, speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth thee. So, Eli realized something's happening. And because Samuel's so young, he's not trained in this. So obviously Eli has not been working with him on this, even though he's a judge as well as high priest. Samuel didn't know it. So, he needed to be told, don't get up. Stay put. Listen up. If it was really God, then God would call one more time. If not, it just has to have been a dream. Verse 10. And the Lord came and stood. I like that. And stood. That he came, that tells us that this is the pre-incarnate Christ right here. And the Lord came and stood and called as at other times, Samuel, Samuel. Then Samuel answered, speak, for thy servant heareth. So the Lord himself appeared. As I said, this is the pre-incarnate Christ. It's also known as a theophany. That's just a fancy word that means the pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus. This was not just his voice, because you remember back there in the Garden of Eden when God came walking in the cool of the day and they heard his voice. Here we've got him standing right here, just like Joshua when he was looking out over at the Jericho, and the angel of the Lord stood there. Now, it was not Michael or Gabriel or some other angel. That was Jesus standing there, because he said, "I come as the commander of the armies of the host of heaven." So here's Jesus yet again making this personal appearance. I am here physically. He's essentially walked in and stood right there by Samuel. Now, when God speaks, we need to listen. When he repeats himself on anything, we need to pay double attention because it's super important. And he came in, he said, "Samuel, Samuel." Now, there's only 8 people in the Bible who had their name called twice like that. Abraham, Abraham, Jacob, Jacob. So on and so forth there. Samuel's one of those people that got Samuel, Samuel. So this is important. Eli instructed Samuel to acknowledge the Lord when he replied. Though Samuel worked and lived in and around the tabernacle at this time, he didn't understand how God would communicate with the people. At those other times, he mistook the voice of the Lord for that of Eli. Now this time, he seems uncertain and leaves out the word Lord out of his reply. As remember, Eli had said, "Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth." And that was, now it says, "Speak, for thy servant heareth." So, you know, he's a little kid too. Yeah, you can't exactly fault him for not saying Lord there. A, he's young, so he's going to forget things. B, I'm sure it's a little scary all of a sudden. Wait a minute, what if this is God talking to me? Because I've been there on that one. When he first started dealing with me to call to preach, it was scared the daylights out of me. I'll share this with you real quick. Hadn't planned on it, but I'll share. The very first time, I'd been bothered by, there's just something, I don't know what it is, but there's just something. And I stopped to pray, and it's, "God, do you want me to preach?" And the peace that washed over me, I did that right there. Scared the daylights out of me. "No, wrong person. I'm only 15. You obviously are forgetting that there are other young men in this church older than me, that you need to be calling them before me." And, oh, no. So, I can understand Samuel all of a sudden, "Speak for thy servant here at thee." Oh, man, am I really talking to God? Oh, my soul. You can just picture it. Leastwise, I can. This shows further proof of the spiritual decline of Israel, too. The word of the Lord was so rare because of sin that those in the know didn't make much effort to pass on what they knew. And Eli literally didn't pass on what he suspected about knowing until verse number 9, just a couple of minutes before this happened. So, Samuel's a little behind the curve there, but it's also partially the fault of his elders. And, you know, sometimes we're just as much to blame with the youth of the church, with our own kids, grandkids, neighborhood kids and such, because we haven't been trying to pass on the right things to them. I know I've been guilty of that. But we can still do it. So long as we're still drawing breath, like Eli, he passed on something here real quick, we can still pass on something to others. The grace of God overlooked the deficiency of Samuel's response and used this willing man in a mighty way. We may not know very much, but God can use a willing heart. Then we skip all the way to chapter number 15. That's a nice little jump there in the Bible. We completely skip over the battle there where Eli and Hophni, or Hophni and Phinehas got killed, and Eli dies, and the ark gets taken to the Philistines, and then is sent back to the Israelites because the Philistines didn't like what they were getting. Saul getting anointed, And now here is Saul, and he's been commissioned by God to go and slaughter the Amalekites. In fact, you know, I know we're supposed to start in verse number 2 of chapter 15, but I want to read verse number 1 as well, just for the fun of it. Samuel also said unto Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint thee to be king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore hearken. Let me zoom in on what I wrote down there because I can't read it. What does that say? Listen intentively is what that word hearken means. Thou unto the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts. I remember that which Amalek did to Israel, how he laid wait for him in the way when he came up from Egypt. And while verse number 3 is not included, we'll read it too here. Now go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass. Kill them all. Wipe them off the face of the planet. That is the assignment. And God had Samuel tell him this, and Samuel says, you need to pay extra close attention to this. Listen diligently. Hearken to what I'm telling you. You have got to do here. Because if you want to see success, you're going to follow what God's telling you to do. If you don't care about seeing success, you're going to do things your own way. Unfortunately, that's what ended up happening. Now, verse 2, real quickly, just touching on the Amalekites. These are the same people who attacked the Israelites when they first got past the Jordan. Or not the Jordan, the Red Sea, I beg your pardon. The Egyptians have all drowned in the Red Sea. The people of Israel have celebrated. Chapter 17 comes along. Boom! Verse number 8, the Amalekites come and start to attack the Israelites. The people weren't ready for war. Had that been the case, that they were ready for war, God could have marched them straight through the Philistines' land all the way to Israel, into Canaan land, where the Israelites were going to set up the nation of Israel, and did it in like 7 days. Instead of sending them straight across, God has them do this loop around. They cut through the Red Sea, and then they go down south, and then they come back up, and they sneak around the backside there to reach into Canaan land because they weren't ready for war. What did Satan do? Y'all ain't ready for war? I'm going to send some warriors out there to put you all in your place, make you want to run back home to Egypt and stay down there. So they attacked. Now, of course, what happened there? Moses and Aaron and Hur, they went up on the mountain. Joshua took the people out there to fight with whatever they had. Moses started praying, lifted up the rod in his hands. They started coming down. The Israelites started to lose. So Aaron got on one side, Hur got on the other side. They raised up the hands. Moses started praying, and the people won the battle that day. But that wasn't the last battle against the Amalekites, because in Numbers chapter 14, verse number 45, right after the 12 spies have gone in and checked out the land, came back. They got the big, huge bunch of grapes they had to carry on a pole between two men. Land is flowing with milk and honey. Hey, Caleb and Joshua, man, praise God, we've got this. We're going to go in there and mop the floor with them. God's got it for us. And the other 10 is sitting back there, no, we're terrified. We are grasshoppers in our own eyes compared to them. Oh, no, we can't do it, can't do it. And they begged them to go anyways, to do it. And the people said, nope, we're going to listen to the 10. And then God says, okay, fine. You ain't getting the land. I'm not going to give it to you. Your kids that you use as an excuse, you didn't want to go fight because you didn't want them getting killed. You know what? They're the ones who are going to cross over into the promised land with Caleb and Joshua. And what did the people do? Oh, never mind, God. We changed our minds. We're going to go. Moses sitting there telling us, don't you do it. Don't you do it. You're going to get whooped. They went and did it. And it was the Amalekites that attacked them when they tried to force their way in. So yes, God remembers those who mess with his people. So someone messes with us, guess what? God remembers that they've messed with us. God will take care of it. We don't need to avenge ourselves. Remember, God gets the revenge, not us. Now, try to get down here to verse number 14. That's the next verse in the lesson. And Samuel said, "What?" You know what? Let me back up to verse 13. Let's back all the way up there to verse 11. Go all the way to verse 11, and then we'll get down to the verse of 14. Verse 11. Verse 10, why not? Then came the word of the Lord unto Samuel, saying, "It repenteth me that I have set up Saul to be king." Now, God didn't change his mind. This is simply a matter of that he needed to show the people what a huge mistake it was to go against his will. And it hurt God's heart. That's what it means by "it repenteth me that I have made Saul to be king. For he has turned back from following me," didn't catch God by surprise, "and hath not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried unto the Lord all night. And when Samuel rose early to meet Saul in the morning, it was told Samuel, saying, Saul came to Carmel, and behold, he set him up a place, and is gone about, and passed on, and gone down to Gilgal. And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, Blessed be thou the Lord, I have performed the commandment of the Lord." Verse 14, this is part of our lesson here. And Samuel said, "What meaneth then this bleating of the sheep in mine ears, and the lowing of the oxen, which I hear?" So, all this noise, bah, bah, Samuel ain't deaf. He can hear it. He ain't no fool either. And we try to pull the wool over God's eyes so often, and all wool over each other's eyes so often. God ain't dumb. We shouldn't be dumb either. Samuel certainly wasn't. He'd already been told by God what had happened. And hearing the animals, that just confirmed what God had told him. "Good night, Saul. How dumb do you think I am? You know what, don't answer that, because I really don't want to hear you say what I already know." God already told him what had happened, and most likely even seen some of the spoils of war on his way into the camp. And he could hear all the extra animals making noise. What he was doing, however, was finding out Saul. "Saul, are you gonna confess, or do I have to drag it out of you?" That calls all the way back to Genesis chapter number 3, when the voice of the Lord came walking in the cool of the day in the garden. "Adam, where art thou?" God knew where he was. He's giving Adam a chance to confess. "I hid myself because I was naked." "Adam, who told you you were naked?" "Well, the woman you gave me, she done messed everything up. It's her fault. Go blame her." "All right, Eve, what did you do?"
"Weren't me. It was the snake who did it. You gotta blame him."
And of course God didn't even bother giving the snake a chance to respond. Because you know the snake's just sitting there like, "Yeah, that's right. You know what I did." But it was God trying to give Adam not one but two chances to confess. He gave Eve a chance to confess. God's allowing Samuel here the opportunity to give Saul a chance to confess. Confession's good for the soul, they say. And what did Saul do? "Let me sit here and twist all this up to make me look good. I don't actually want to confess to what you already know." How low it's all sunk that the sound of the animals made didn't even bother him. And that he was comfortable in his sin to not even notice it. How often do we get that low into sin that don't bother us? That we could honestly sit there and hear everything going around and say, "Man, that's life." See what's going on? "Man, that's life." We need to guard ourselves so that we don't sink that low. All right, we are going to go ahead and pause here at verse 15 of chapter 15 next time. And We'll continue here with Saul and his passing the buck around and dodging questions and giving half-truth answers and whatnot. Samuel is trying to show him the error of his ways, and Saul's just too dense to understand. Me no git. Me do good, yeah? Yeah, no, you ain't no dumb caveman, Saul. You ain't that dumb either. But he tried to play it that way. And unfortunately, we try to play God that same way too. So let's make sure we are being careful on that. Do we have any comments, questions, or concerns? If not, let's go ahead and dismiss in a word of prayer.